everyone, to this special edition of Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Today, my special guest is Wallace Strobe, who is a very highly regarded crime fiction novelist. One of his first books was a finalist for the Barry Award. He's been named Kirkus's Best Book of the Year author a couple times in a row, as a matter of fact. He is a former editor of a newspaper, and we're going to talk to him about his long and storied career in writing both journalism and books. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Wallace Strobe. Hi, Wallace. How are you today?
Hi, Pam. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Congratulations on the release of Some Die Nameless. It's a terrific novel. It's not your series character, Krista Stone, but this is a Ray Devlin book. I think I talked to you in the green room. I said I like the fact that at least part of it's set in Florida, where I live. Do all people come to Florida like to hide out? Is that what your impression is? Because I feel like we get a lot of these, you know, in real life. All these weirdos are found here in Florida. You know, wonder where someone could be hiding. Let's go look in Florida. It kind of feels like that.
Yeah, they all migrate from up north. Yeah. I have a long history with Florida, actually. I went to school there for a couple of years in St. Augustine at Flagler College. And then my mom lived for many years in Riviera Beach.
Oh.
About 25 years until she passed. So, I used Riviera Beach a little bit in the book as well. But I know that area, you know, very well from being down there so much over, you know, a 23-year period.
Well, St. Augustine is so different than Riviera Beach. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
This old historic St. Augustine, beautiful, fabulous old city with all its ghost ruins. And then you have Riviera Beach, which is in Palm Beach County, for those of you who don't know, sitting kind of straddling on the other side of the water from all the socialites in Palm Beach. So it's an interesting dynamic there. But I love it. It's great. Let's tell everyone, please, a little bit about this story from Some Die Nameless.
Well, it was a break from my series. I had written four books in a series about Krista Stone, a female professional thief. And I wanted to do a standalone because at the end of the last Krista Stone book, which is called The Devil's Share, I had left her in a kind of precarious state. She had gotten kind of beaten up in the course of the book and was fleeing the country. So I decided it was time to take a break and to do a standalone. So there were two things that were coming together, I think, in my putting the book together in my head early on, is I wanted to write something about the sort of military contractor culture, which is, you know, sprung up after 9/11 and which is now just part of the national consciousness. And I also eventually wanted to write something about newspapers. So the initial idea was to have Ray Devlin be a ex-mercenary in his 50s, not an action hero by any means, who had been involved in helping overthrow a Latin American government in the early 90s. And then his life back then would be catching up with him. He's been living off the grid. And an old friend comes to visit him and tries to kill him. And then it follows from there. You know, why did this man come down here and all that? So that was just the initial
thing. With
friends like that. Yeah. So that was the initial idea, that somebody that you used to work with shows up, you haven't seen them, and then in years, and they try and kill you. I mean, that was the idea, first of all. And then as I got into figuring out what Ray's background was, then I was able to bring in Tracy Quinn, who's a reporter at a Philadelphia newspaper, who's covering what seems to be just a random murder, which turns into be connected to Devlin's past as well. So that was the whole connection with that book between the two characters, and then having them eventually come together, each of them having a piece of the puzzle, but not knowing where it all fits in yet.
It's an interesting thing. You write some really edgy crime fiction. You know, I've read some of your work in the past, and your characters, I don't want to say are I'm not labeling anyone good or bad, but there's a definite quirk and an edge to some of your characters. And something you said, I want to kind of pull the thread on it in that respect. You said, you know, these military contractors that are seem to be in the public consciousness, I don't know that they really are. I don't think people realize how much we use, rely on contractors. And so is a contractor and a mercenary, are they actually the same thing, Wallace, in your
opinion?
No,
there isn't. And I make the distinction in the course of dialogue in the book. A mercenary is somebody that works for a foreign government for money. The contractors, what we know commonly as contractors now, mm-hmm. work for American companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there is a difference, but it's sort of like, you know, people lump them into the category of mercenary. And when the character Ray Devlin was involved in it, it was in the early 90s, before there was even this culture of, you know, private military.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at that point, back then, at that time period, you know, they probably would have been known as mercenaries, as opposed to actual mercenaries, which were, you know, sort of like the British and Australian former military people who ended up working, like, for the Republic of the Congo and you know,
mm-hmm.
other countries where they fought for them for pay rather than actually being attached to a company, an American company or a British company.
Even though his work as a contractor is over, it's very timely in that I don't know that a lot of people know most of the boots on the ground for our country overseas are contractors. We don't have a lot of our own military there as much as we have a lot of contractors there, isn't that so?
Yes, that is. And some of the stuff that's come out recently about Eric Prince and you know, who's the former head of Blackwater, who's
right.
renamed his company, you know, like twice, you know, they have contracts all over the world. And since they are private businesses, they have no obligation to tell anybody about them. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on that, you know, no one really knows about except at certain levels.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I used to read a lot of covert ops type of stuff. And, you know, how much of that do you think this black op things that go on, I don't think people know about those things, do they? The general public are aware?
I think there have been some books written in the last few years, I think, that directly address some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was less interested in that, you know, as it is currently, as I was interested in the idea of the aftermath of war. You know, what happens mm-hmm. when these guys leave the country? What happened when these guys, you know, left these countries in the 90s? And in Ray's case, the government that he and his team helped put into power ended up being in this extremely repressive, you know, right-wing government. And I sort of like the idea of the way some of these countries, they swing from a brutal, repressive left-wing government to a brutal, repressive right-wing government, and then sometimes
yes.
back the other way again. So, you know, I was more interested in that and sort of the legacy of that. And then one of the villains was a war orphan in the Balkans in the 90s who, again, was affected as a child by what was going on there.
This is not, I mean, this could, obviously the book is fiction. The fact of the matter is, it's really a lot of this going on and has been for a lot of years, where we, maybe our country thinks we're helping to get rid of a bad guy only to replace him by a worse guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a lot
of always
history.
I mean, there's always, you know, what our interests are, you know, in any given place in the world, and you know what we'll do to advance those interests. And you know, there's a storied history going, you know, actually, if you want to go back, you can go back to the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
you know, with American involvement in Latin America, certainly in Central America. So it's part of our history.
It is. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you are a former, well, you were a reporter, but you were also an editor at your home in New Jersey. And what was the name of the newspaper that you worked with?
I worked for 13 years at the New York Star Ledger, which is the largest paper in the state. And then before that, I worked 10 years at the Asbury Park Press, which was a smaller paper in Monmouth County.
Wow. How did your career as a journalist and an editor help you or hinder you when you wanted to write crime fiction?
I don't think it hindered me, except in that I wrote my first three books while I was working full time, and that was
wow.
rough. And I also
wow.
had a long commute, so it was tough, you know, carving out the time to actually work on the books and give them the proper concentration that they needed with everything else that was going on. As far as helping, I think the skills that you learn in journalism, whether it's at a newspaper or some other venue, but especially at a newspaper, which is deadline-oriented, I think those experiences and those skills you learn are very, very useful in writing. You learn how to be a self-starter. You learn how to organize material. You learn how to work on deadline. You learn how to work, you know, even if you're not feeling inspired. And you also, I think, develop kind of a thick skin when it comes to the editing process, and I think that's good.
You also really have to be mindful when you're writing column inches. You are mindful of the words that you're using. You're not using a lot of adjectives all the time, I would imagine, because you want to get to the who, what, why, where, and when, and how of it all. So that makes you a leaner writer in fiction, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's terse is better, sparse is better. You know, jump to the point. What's the nut graph? What's the, you know, what thoughts are you trying to get across? At the same time, you do want to slow down every once in a while and create mood and, you know, embroider and enhance characters. So it can't be terse all the time. But certainly
right.
the writers that I admire most are ones that are out of that tradition, many of whom were, you know, newsmen at one point or another. You know, writers going back to the 30s and the 40s like James M. Cain and Dashiell Hammett and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Up to, you know, there's a lot of former journalists writing crime fiction now. Laura Lippman, Michael Connelly.
Yes.
John Sanford, who under his real name John Camp, actually won a Pulitzer in the 80s.
Yeah, I just talked to him last week, as a matter of fact. I actually got him to never smile, because he doesn't do that, but he just pose a picture with me, you know, kind of begrudgingly, I think. I think I have all of his books. He's a very nice man, though. He's very interesting. You know, you said something in the beginning. You said, you know, what your intention was when you started writing this book about Ray and, you know, and so on. May I assume by that that you do not outline, that you are kind of a more organic writer?
Yes, I don't outline. That has changed slightly. That it changed slightly with this book, because at some point it's the most characters I've ever written in a book where they had their own perspectives. Usually it's only
right.
two perspectives. In this case, there were
right.
five. So at some point during the writing of the book, I had to outline just to keep track of what was happening to who in which chapter. So when
yeah, you
I
have a lot
book,
of moving parts in this book, a lot of moving parts. So I can see how you would. I was wondering, how did you keep them all organized?
Well, I don't outline to start with. Basically, all I need is to know who the characters are and know what the situation is. And both those things will change during the course of the book. But when I have those things originally at first, then I think, okay, I'm good to start writing and then see what happens. In the case of Some Die Nameless, there was, as you said, there was a lot of moving parts. So as I
yes.
was going through it and doing a lot of rewriting and changing backstory and things like that, where one change affected something earlier in the book or in something later, I had to actually start keeping track of what was happening in each chapter. So to a certain extent, I did an outline, but it was in the writing of the book rather than any sort of preparatory thing.
Interesting. When I want to go back and talk about Chrissa Stone, because she's kind of your signature badass character, and I like that in a lead character. She's, you know, she's not the nicest person, you know, she's not the most law-abiding person on the planet, let's be serious. But when you're writing a serious character like that, how do you keep track of what she's done or what she looks like or, you know, who her friends are or family or birthdays or anything like that? When you're writing, maybe not 4 books in a row, you might be writing every other book is a Krissa book. Is there a character Bible or something that you keep? How do you know? Or do you just remember?
I think with the Krissa books, you know, it was pretty much all her backstory was there in that first book.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the characters that occur later in the series are also embedded in that first book, sometimes in small ways. So I did occasionally have to go back and look to check on, like, what town her daughter was or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
most of it I was able to keep in my head. With the Krissa books, that was kind of unusual because every time I finished one of those books, I immediately had an idea for the next one. And that almost
Jeez.
Never happened to me. So in that case of those 4 books, I mean, they followed, although there was time in between them, in the writing-wise.
Right.
You know, they came pretty much on the heels of each other because her story was still very much in my mind and what was going to happen next and what was going to happen to these characters she'd already interacted with.
Right. I'm kind of she reminds me of Greg Barth's Selena, who is just about as crazy as they come. And I like those books very much. Would you consider yourself a noir crime writer?
It's funny because I thought I have been called that, and I certainly, you know, my first couple books, my first few books, I guess, were very much in that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I did not think that was the case with this book. I thought I was breaking out of that. Not that I have anything against it. I'm perfectly fine with it, but I just thought this was a different type of book. But then New York Magazine included it in a roundup last week and called it
right.
Noir for the beach. So I guess, you know, what you write comes out, you know, it comes out the way it comes out, no matter what you think you're trying to do, because, you know, your voice comes out, you know, whatever it is. The Krissa books are more noir, and
yeah.
I've written a short story about her that's going to be in an anthology that Lawrence Block edited. Which is a noir called At Home.
I remember I just talked to him too. As a matter of fact, he dropped me an email the other day and was talking to somebody at Thriller Fest about that book. But Lord, I can't remember who it was because, you know, I'm dazed and confused after, you know, hundreds of authors walking by and all. Yeah, he's quite a guy. LB is quite a guy. So congratulations on your inclusion in that. I will look forward to reading that book. For sure.
Yeah, and that story is very consciously a noir story because the whole thing, it takes place over the course of one night, and she's on the run. And, I mean, that was very, you know, that's sort of a noir idea. And the anthology is certainly a noir anthology. The title is At Home in the Dark, so you can't get any more noir than that.
It's true. Now, is this a jump from the end of the last Krissa book until we get to the next Krissa book? Is this whatever this one day is kind of happening in between?
Yeah, in between the previous books, probably in between the second and third book or the third and fourth book. There are certain
mm-hmm.
things that are bookmarked in the series. In the first book, Cold Shot to the Heart, she has never fired a gun at a person in anger. And that changes during the course of the book. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do anything set before that book without, you know, keeping that in mind. And then the stuff that happens to her in the fourth book, The Devil's Share, is so, you know, apocalyptic in terms of her world that anything that followed from that would have had to include that. So this story
yeah.
sort of fits into a niche at some point in the earlier books, in between those.
Interesting.
Books.
Do you have a preference of which style do you like writing series? Do you want to continue doing that? Do you prefer standalone, or do you just like the art of and the craft of writing?
I don't, you know, writing the series felt natural because it just seemed like with every book, as I said, I had an idea for the next one in terms of her world, because I was exploring her world. So that came very naturally. At the end of that fourth book, I really felt, as I said, like both of us needed a break. So it's a little tougher going after writing four books in a row about the same characters in the same world, and I know how she's going to respond to everything, and I know her voice. And to start a standalone book where all the characters are different and the tone was different and the story was different and the world was different, yeah, I had to bear down on that a little bit more. It was good. I mean, it was a good exercise. But it was different from, you know, writing those Krissa books, although, you know, certainly it's not, you know, writing a book is never easy. But, you know, when I settled in, I know that world. And once I get into that world, you know, I know how things work in that world.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. I'm curious. You said you know her world, you know her voice and all that. When does a series need to stop being a series? When do you need to not write any more about a character?
I don't know. You know, and a good example of that is Lawrence Block's Matt Scudder series, which is a seminal crime fiction series. I mean, there is no private detective or crime novel series in America that is not, you know, a serious one that is not, you know, does not have the Matt Scudder books in their DNA. And he stopped several times and then was, you know, for all purposes, is telling people he wasn't going to write about Scudder again. And then all of a sudden, Scudder reemerged with a series of great books in the 90s.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I never thought that I stopped writing about Krissa. I just always thought that I, you know, took a break. And I switched publishers at the same time. So that was, you know, that was another reason to take a break. So it felt like it was time to stretch a little bit and to try to expand what I was doing and also try to expand the audience a little bit. So it felt like it was the, you know, it was the right time to do that. Certainly, you know, I had an idea for a fifth Krissa novel already semi-planned out in my head, and that's still there.
Wow.
And I can always, you know, I know enough of it that I could start to work on it. So if, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, you know, I would happily go back to that.
It seems to me, and it might be just the nature of being with a traditional publishing house, especially one as big as Mulholland, you will release a book a year, do you think, Wallace?
I would like to. I'm not the, as people know, I'm not the fastest writer in the world, despite my newspaper my newspaper background. I would very much like to, and I did for a number of years. I mean, I had books 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2015. So it was just a break between the last Krissa book and this one for a variety of reasons. There was stuff going on, you know, in camp. And
just life happens, you know, and you have to deal with it.
Yeah, and then, you know, it took longer to write the new book, and then I abandoned the book once and then went back to it. And so there was a lot of stuff going on. But I would very much like to be able to do a book a year, or at least, you know, a book every year and a half, actually, I think it would be good.
So let me ask you this. When you sit down to write a standalone, which comes first, the character or the scenario, the plot?
Generally the character, but a lot of times the character idea is coming to me at the same time as the plot idea, the bones of the plot idea. I mean, with Krissa, I knew what she did for a living, that she was a thief. You know, a working class thief, not a, you know, not somebody, you know,
not it takes a thief.
A leotard dodging laser beams.
Right.
So, you know, knowing that, then I know, you know, what happens in her world and what might happen and how that situation would result in that. Same thing with Ray. You know, and I very much wanted him to be in his late 50s. He was not, and he was never a special ops or anything like that. He was just a grunt who helped train, you know, people in basic military tactics. So once I had that idea of who he was and what his world was, then when I introduced this guy from his past, then certain things are going to happen as a result of that. You know, the writing process is a lot of it is eliminating false directions to find out the true direction, because you can go in any number of directions, you know, in an introductory scene. And it's finding the right one is the trick. And sometimes you have to back up to where you went wrong, where you made that wrong turn, and then redo it, which is never fun, but it's always the thing, you know, that you have to do.
Well, if you know it's wrong, you have to go back and do it, whether it's fun or not. It's just, it is part of making your book successful and keeping your small business afloat. You've got to know the right merchandise, right?
Yes, and sometimes when you realize how far back you have to go, that can be discouraging. But then once you're on the road, you know it feels right. So you know it's worth it. It's worth the aggravation.
Interesting. What's next for you?
I'm working on another standalone, something you know a little bit smaller scale, and
mm-hmm.
probably a little bit more, I hope, tightly wound. I love those kind of big international, you know, conspiracy books, and there's a little bit of that in some Die Nameless, but I don't, you know, that's not really where my strengths lie as a writer. Although I love to read those books, it's not really, you know, I'm playing in somebody else's sandbox when I'm doing that. So
right.
I think I'm going to, you know, this next one will be a little, you know, will be a little bit closer, you know, tighter knit and, you know, a little more, I don't know what the word is, but a little more everyday.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I kind of like that. It's the everyday, you know, everyman and what if, you know, what situation
yes.
are the, and it could be the most innocuous situation, you know, and those to me are very interesting stories. Even though I like all genres of books, speaking of, have you ever had an interest in writing outside of your genre?
I think, you know, early on, you know, when I was a kid and a teenager, I read in every genre. You know, I read everything. I read horror, I read science fiction, I read, you know, mainstream, I read crime fiction, I read everything. I think as I started to find my voice, I was finding that that was the voice that I was, you know, finding in crime fiction. And certainly the, you know, the writers that I was reading pretty consistently
mm-hmm.
from the time I was like
mm-hmm.
12 to, you know, now, I've always been crime writers, although I read widely, you know, I don't just read in the genre. So
mm-hmm.
I think, as I always say, sometimes what you write chooses you more than you choose it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had ideas about it, but nothing where, you know, nothing where I felt like the motivation was there to actually sit down and do it.
Well, there's kind of 6 degrees of separation with crime fiction and horror and science fiction on either side anyway. And so you're not the only person to have said that to me, the only writer of particularly noir crime fiction. There's just so many overlapping themes there. So I know a lot of writers are interested in trying those. As a matter of fact, speaking of John Sanford, you know, he partnered with a guy and wrote a kind of a science fiction book, which did not do well. But he was always interested in writing one. He told me when I interviewed him a couple of years ago that he always wanted to write science fiction, but it was something that had to feel real to him, that
mm-hmm.
he could imagine being real. So he wasn't looking at, you know, the aliens from Star Wars or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so I got the impression he was talking like military science fiction or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, of course, since he's gone back to Lucas and Flowers and all those people, you know, which is great because I love those. So you are on book tour now, are you not?
I'm on, yeah, semi-book tour, mainly just the, you know, tri-state area.
And you are going to be someplace tonight. Tell everyone where you're going to be, please.
I will be at the Moonstone Mystery Bookstore in Flemington, New Jersey, which is a wonderful historic town on the not far from the Pennsylvania border. And then I'll be back in Asbury Park on August 4th, which is in Monmouth County, which is near where I live. And then I will be at BatraCon in St. Petersburg in September.
Good. We'll
and
see each other. That's right
yeah,
up the street
that,
from me. Yeah.
Poison Pen bookstore in Phoenix or in Scottsdale in October.
Wow. And just as an aside, you know, you're talking about the county as Mammoth County, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to NPR on my way to the studio, and that county has the most restrictive ban now on plastics on the beach. No more straws, no plastic lids, no styrofoam, things like that. They want their beaches to be environmentally protected. So kudos to your county for doing that. It's a really monumental
thing. The beach is everything here. You know, I live a block from the beach. I grew up a block, you know, a couple blocks from the beach. So that's very much part of this part of the state.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I guess the town council or the county people who are out, whatever the title is for the folks there, really had no problem getting behind it once they got the merchants on the beach, because tourism is so huge there, correct?
Yeah, so I
thought that was pretty cool, and I did not know that was your county when you began talking. Wallace Strobe, thank you so much for being my guest today. Success with the book. It's a terrific book. I look forward to whatever your next standalone is, and of course to LB's anthology. That should be really fun to read, although I don't think there's a release date, even a tentative release date on that yet, is there?
No, I don't think so. He was shooting for either end of this year or early next. I guess it's looking more like early next.
Yeah, I think he's gone through the end of August anyway. So. Well, all the best to you. Much success with Some Die Nameless. Tell everyone where they can find you on the webs, please.
www.wallacestrobe.com and also Facebook and Twitter.
Terrific. Hey, good luck on book tour. I'll see you in September at BoucherCon. And again, thanks for being with me, Wallace. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Pam.
Okay, safe drives.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
Sure thing. Bye-bye. And that's our show for tonight. Thanks for being with me. Don't forget to listen to the podcast from Thriller Fest. Terrific stuff going on there. Thanks so much, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Bye-bye.